भगवते वासुदेवायाम् ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 5, Text 26. Sarvani mat nishnyataya bhavadbi chirani bhutani suta ruvani sambhavitavyani Pade pade va vivikta drigbi tat u ha arhanam me Sarvani madishni ataya bhavadbhish Charani bhutani suta dhruvani Sambhavita vyani pade padevo Vivikta drig bistaru harhanam me Sarvani madishni ataya bhavidbhish Charani bhutani suta dhruvani Sambhavita vyani pade padevo Vivikta drig bistadu harhanam me Sarvani madishni ataya bhavadbhish Charani bhutani suta dhruvani Sambhavita vyani pade padevo Vivikta drig bistaru harhanam me. Please chant. Sarvani madishni ataya bhavadbhish. Ladies, please. Sarvani, all. Matdishniyatteya, because of being my sitting place. Vavadbi, by you. Charani, that move. Bhutani, living entities. Sutta, my dear sons. Dhruvani, that do not move. Sambhavita Vyani, to be respected. Pade Pade, at every moment. Va, by you. Vivikta Drigbi, possessing. This is a long explanation of these two words, so I'll take it in a few. Possessing clear vision and understanding that the Supreme Personality of Godhead in His Paramatma feature is situated everywhere. Tat u, that indirectly, ha, certainly, arhanam, offering respect, may, unto me. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada ki. My dear sons, you should not envy any living entity, be he moving or non-moving. Knowing that I am situated in them, you should offer respect to all of them at every moment. In this way, you offer respect to whom? To me. This is the Lord speaking. I'll repeat that. Let us all repeat it together. My dear sons, you should not envy any living entity, be he moving or non-moving. Knowing that I am situated in them, you should offer respect to all of them at every moment. In this way, you offer respect to me. Purport. In this verse, the word vivikta drigbi, meaning without envy, is used. All living entities are the abode of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in His Paramatma feature. As confirmed in Brahma Samhita, andantarastam paramanu chayantarastam. The Lord is situated in this universe as Garbhodakshayi Vishnu and Kshirodakshayi Vishnu. He is also situated within every atom. According to the Vedic statement, Isha Vasyam Idam Sarvam, the Supreme Lord is situated everywhere, and wherever He is situated is His temple. We even offer respects to a temple. We even offer respects to a temple from a distant place, and all living entities should similarly be offered respect. This is different from the theory of pantheism, which holds that everything is God. Everything has a relationship with God because God is situated everywhere. We should not make any particular distinction between the poor and the rich, like the foolish worshippers of Daridra Narayan. Narayan is present in the rich as well as the poor. One should not simply think Narayan is situated among the poor. He is everywhere. Sometimes people promote this idea, especially in India, that we should worship the poor because the Lord is apparently more in them than in anyone else, and that's because they're always in a difficult or troublesome position, so they're crying out. But that doesn't mean the Lord is more in them. If they're crying out genuinely, intensely, devotedly, then He's simply manifesting more in them, but He is not more in them. He's in everyone equally. And that's the point that Srila Prabhupada is making right here. Narayan is present in the rich and the poor. One should not simply think Narayan is situated among the poor. He is everywhere. An advanced devotee will offer respects to everyone, even to cats and dogs. Vidya Vinaya Sampane, Brahmane Gavi Hastini, Shuni Chaiva Svapake Cha, Pandita Samadarshana, which means, anybody remember, know the meaning of that? Would like to volunteer it? Okay, I'll start you out. The humble sage. What else? A cow, what else? Okay. The humble sage, by virtue of true knowledge, sees with equal vision a learned and gentle Brahmin, a cow, an elephant, a dog, and a dog eater, or an outcast. That's from 5:18 in the Bhagavad Gita. The Sama Darshana, equal vision, should not be mistaken to mean that the individual is the same as the Supreme Lord. They are always distinct. Every individual person is different from the Supreme Lord. It is a mistake to equate the individual living entity with the Supreme Lord on the plea of vivikta drik samadrik. The Lord is always in an exalted position, even though he agrees to live everywhere. Srila Madhvacharya, quoting Padma Purana, states, vivikta drishti jivanam dish niyataya parameshvarasya veda drishti, which means, quote, one who has clear vision and who is devoid of envy can see that the Supreme Lord is separate from all living entities, although he is situated in every living entity. Madhvacharya further quotes from Padma Purana, Upapadaye paratmanam jive bhyo ya pade pade vedenaiva cha chaitasmat priyo vishnostu kashchana. Which means, one who sees the living entity and the Supreme Lord as always distinct is very dear to the Lord. Padma Purana also states, Yo Haresh Chaiva Jivanam Veda Vakta Hare Priya, which means, one who preaches that the living entities are separate from the Supreme Lord is very dear to Lord Vishnu. Dear because that is the truth. And those who think they are equal to the Lord is untruth. They are equal in quality, but never in quantity. Omagyana timiranda syagananjana shalakaya chakshur unmalitam yena tasmai shri guruve namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance, and my spiritual master opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisances at his lotus feet. My dear sons, you should not envy any living entity, be he moving or non-moving. Knowing that I am situated in them, you should offer respect to all of them at every moment. In this way, you offer respect to me. The main point of this particular translation or verse is in the first line. My dear sons, this is Lord Rishabhdev guiding or talking, instructing his sons. And this is actually very beneficial. It is great when one has a father who is enlightened. In the case of Rishabhdev, he is more than enlightened. He is the enlightenment. So being that, and to have such a father, these 100 sons are very blessed. Because he is giving them the proper direction, the proper instruction to live a truly happy, fulfilled, and meaningful life. Generally, people are simply born. And they have a father, they have a mother, who is generally of a materialistic nature. Even though they may go to church once or twice a week, but they don't know the real purpose of life. Consequently, they raise their children with the concept, with the idea that you should try to earn lots of money, be famous, or be beautiful, be powerful, be strong, be very knowledgeable, get a lot of college degrees if you can. And they think that, and also use your money to get lots of sense pleasure. If you do this, you will be happy, they think. And this is their ignorance. It's nothing more than plain ignorance. We can't condemn them for this, but we actually have to help them, assist them, enlighten them to realize that there is a higher level, a higher form of happiness than what they have been taught. They think generally that the only happiness is that which comes from the five senses, the mind, and the intelligence. The pleasures that you get when you eat some food, or you hear some music, or you smell some flower, or you use your imagination, or your creativity, or you use your memory. There's pleasure in that. And there's also pleasure in figuring out things. You get puzzles. You get problems. You figure them out, and you get some pleasure when you solve. But these are very temporary pleasures. They last for just a few minutes. And all they do is inject the false ego with more hot air. That's all they get. Lots of hot air. Hot air means like a balloon. The false ego is like a balloon sitting on our head. And every time we take a little praise for our beauty or our wealth or our influence, our power, our fame. Yes, I'm great. Yes, I'm wonderful. Oh, you're so wonderful. Oh, I adore you. I look up to you. You're so much. Every time we take that to ourselves and swallow it, the poison is the hot air that keeps expanding the big balloon of the false ego. And it keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger. Like that blimp that they have over the Super Bowl, Goodyear. So when the ego starts reaching that point, we're really in trouble. So if you become a big movie star or a big-time writer or a big-time anything, big-time lawyer, big-time accountant, and everybody is praising you and glorifying you and adoring you and bowing down to you, and you're taking it, you're eating it, you're swallowing it, it's really like taking a whole handful of salmonella and just gobbling it down. It's poison. And what it does is that it makes us believe falsely that we're superior to everyone around us. After all, he's not getting that glory. She's not getting that greatness. No one's adoring her. No one's praising him. I'm special. I'm unique. I'm wonderful. I am the Lord of all I survey. This is the mentality, although it's generally not set in those particular words, but that mentality is there. I'm special, I'm superior, I'm wonderful. And as soon as that happens, as soon as someone else appears to become greater than you, that's what this verse is about. You begin to envy him. Now they're giving him or her the praise. Oh, you're so beautiful. But what about me? What about my beauty? What about my wealth? What about my fame? Doesn't that count? Oh, you're nothing anymore. He or she is the real great person now. So what has happened? What happens? I feel crushed. I feel small. I feel insignificant. My sense of lordship has been stolen from me. It's taken away. I'm abject. I have nothing. So what happens? I feel envy. And what does an envious person want to do? An envious person wants to steal the glory, the limelight, or the power from the person who's now being glorified. And how do we do that? Well, we criticize the person. We say bad things about the person. We spread rumors about the person. These things are going on. We find faults in the person. For example, a person, they have done a beautiful painting. And you're the painter, and everybody's praising her painting or his painting. And everybody's saying, oh, this is so wonderful. It's startling. It just jumps out at you. You just really feel a connection with the characters in that painting. And then person looks at you and says, well, what do you think about it? Well, you know, it's got this thing. This hand is out of proportion. Don't you see that the fingers can never be like that? You find something wrong with it, which may not even be wrong. But that's according to your subjective opinion. So in finding something wrong, then everybody looks at the wrong thing, and that's the idea that this person is really not as good as everyone is saying. So that possibly, hopefully, prayerfully, they will look at your painting and see it as better than that person's. That's the whole idea of envy. So envy is like a noxious, harmful weed. And if we allow it to control us, it gradually strangles us. It destroys our spiritual life. It causes us to commit one offense after another, after various devotees. And we all, the false ego, because it's so puffed up, it's so big, gives us, or I should say Maya gives us, all kinds of justifications for what we say. For example, I said, well, the finger isn't in the right place, the hand doesn't look in proportion. So Maya is giving us different ways in which we can apparently criticize this person in a very reasonable fashion. But the really bottom gut motive is, I want to smash that person. I want to get rid of that person. I want to destroy that person because he's taking away my lordship. No one's glorifying me. No one's looking up to me anymore. This is, I started by saying that as children, we are taught to try to become somebody important, become a hero, become a heroine, become a big movie star, you know, become a big great basketball star. Today they're going to have the big parade. And the way they started the parade out is by smashing all kinds of cars and windows, creating all kinds of havoc and destruction in the city of L.A. This is how we celebrate our great champions, the L.A. Lakers. By committing destruction. So now they've hired, not hired, but they've brought in more and more police. Today is the big parade, and who knows what's going to happen then. What kind of happiness is this in destroying somebody's property? That's how you celebrate your team's victory? This is madness. This is Kali Yuga. When everybody should be throwing flowers, as they do in Satya Yuga, and they do in Treta Yuga, they even do it today in various places where Brahminical culture exists. You throw flowers. When Krishna would pass, they would throw flowers at him. When great personalities pass, they throw flowers. They put garlands. They don't smash houses and burn them down. This is madness. This is Kali Yuga. So the point is this, is that as when we're little children, your uncles and your aunts always say to you, well, what do you want to be when you grow up, Tommy or Janie? Well, I like to be a nurse. Is that all? Well, maybe I like to be a big-time singer and go on that big program, America Has Got Talent. So then what? Well, then I'll become a big star. Oh, that's what we wanted to hear. So we are engendered from an early age to try to be a lord of some sort. Otherwise, the family that has no significance. No one is applauding the family. No one is praising the family. The family doesn't have its name in the newspapers. So at least my child may succeed and obtain all those things. And in so doing, by extension, because the child has come from my body, if my child is famous, if my child is knowledgeable, if my child is glorified, then indirectly I will be glorified. So that's the whole idea. The idea is that through our children we try to live, and sometimes we make them go through unholy hell. For example, if you've ever watched the Little League games and watched the parents during those Little League games, I mean, they're screaming and yelling. And when the kid, you know, their own kid strikes out, oh, it's like they've been crushed, like they've been pounded, like they've been kicked, battered, badgered, and bewildered. It's a horrible situation. That's because they're identifying themselves with their bodies. And their kids are the extensions of their bodies. So this is the problem of today. Envy. Envy comes from the desire to want to glorify our own little bodies, our minds, and our intelligence, and wanting to lord it over the material world. We want to lord it over because we have come from the spiritual world. We have a taste of Krishna within us, and we want to taste what it's like to be a powerhouse, to be adored and glorified. This is our great failing. So therefore, Srila Prabhupada has so gloriously and so mercifully come to us, and he has told us through these books and through his personal talks, room conversations, that is not the goal of life. The goal of life is to surrender to God, not try to be a competitor of God. Surrender means to accept whatever is favorable for discharging devotional service. Reject whatever is unfavorable for discharging devotional service. To believe firmly that the Lord will always protect His devotee. To always depend upon the mercy of the Lord. To have no separate interest besides the interest of God. Which doesn't mean that if you have a job, you have to leave your job and you have to necessarily live in the temple. It means that wherever you are, whatever you're doing, as Krishna says, whatever you do, whatever you eat, whatever you offer, give away, do it for me. You prepare food, do it for me. You're working in a shoe factory, do it for me. You're a teacher, teach for me. You're a sanitation worker, pick up the trash for me. Whatever you do, do it for me, and that's holy. There is nothing unholy about a legal, moral job. The only thing that's unholy is to forget Krishna while we perform it. That's unholy. Anything else is, if Krishna is the center of the activity, then yes, it is holy. So, the important point as being made here, is that we need to overcome this envy by the process which I've just mentioned of surrendering to the Lord. Surrendering to the Lord means thy will be done, your will be done. My will is worthless, useless. It's based upon Maya. It's based upon ignorance. It's based upon illusions. But your will is based on truth. It's based on knowledge. It's based on purity. So let me do your will, and if I do your will, my life will be not only sublime, but successful. Because anytime we work for Krishna, we try to serve Krishna. As long as it is done with the idea of pleasing Krishna and not our big blimp of a false ego, but it's to please the Lord, then it will be successful. If our goal is to simply please our false ego, then what will happen is that pride sets in, and as we know, pride goes before the fall. We will have a fall down. We will be upset when people criticize us. How many times do we get upset? Somebody says, well, you know, you dhotis, look, you didn't put it on. You know, the front of it is pushed a little to the side, or it's dragging on the floor. Rather than just saying, oh, well, thank you very much. I'm glad you call it to my attention. Like just a few moments ago, I had Sachi Tanoi. I had the conch shell. It was resting on the floor. And I had seen other people do that. It wasn't actually the floor. It was on a cloth. But it's a cloth which you use to clean the floor. So if I was a little more envious than I am, then I would have, when he corrected me, I would have blown up and exploded at him. And who asked you? Who asked for your opinion? You know, but that's not the way we act. If somebody gives you genuine, useful criticism and it makes sense, then you accept it and thank the person. But an envious person will not do that. The reason he won't do that is because he feels his little sense of superiority has in some way been stepped upon by the criticism. He's been made to feel that he's less than he actually is. And feeling less than he is, he needs to get back up to where he was. And the way he gets back to where he was is he needs to smash the offender. Who asked you? Who needs you? Get out of here. How many times we've heard that? Get out of my face. I don't want to look at you. I hate you. Sometimes husbands and wives, they have these wonderful arguments. I hate you. Get out of me. Don't come back for a month. I'm going to my mother. You won't see me. So all these things, they do come up. So all these things, they do happen. And they are the result of envy. Krishna says, I envy no one. And I'm partial to no one. I'm equal to all. But whoever renders service unto me in devotion is a friend, is in me, and I am a friend to him. So if we render loving service to the Supreme Lord with an object of pleasing him, satisfying him, bringing more pleasure to him than he already has. Krishna doesn't need anything. He's already blissful. That's his nature. But if we, by pure love, add to the joy that he has, because that's what gives him joy, when we express pure love is that kind of expression or feeling that we want the best for that person. Like if you have a little baby or a child is crying, so you want to relieve, excuse me, You want to relieve the child of its pain. You check whether it's hungry. The mother may give the child a breast. If it still cries, then she looks at it. Maybe there's a safety pin or something open, or maybe the child needs to be changed. But the important thing is that you want to relieve the pain and suffering of the other. And similarly, Krishna. Krishna is in the corner of his devotee. He tries to make sure that the devotee does not suffer. The only time he allows or contributes to the suffering of a devotee is to purify us and teach us. But it is not done with the object of envy or the object of hatred or hostility or what do they call? Or when a person is glad to see another person suffer. It's never done with that idea. When Krishna gives us difficulties, trials, and tribulations, it's to enable us, to help us come closer to Him, because trials and tribulations and difficulties make us what? They make us more sensitive. And the more sensitive we become, not only to our own problems, but to the problems, for example, if somebody is pushing a pin in my hand and it's paining me terribly, then I know what that feels like. And if I see somebody pushing a pin in somebody's hand, I may want to stop him from doing that because I know what it feels like and I know what the pain is like and I want to relieve him. That's what love is. So similarly, the devotee gives his love to Krishna in the form of his service, hearing, chanting of the Lord, serving the lotus feet of the Lord, worshiping the Lord, offering prayers to the Lord, practical service to the Lord, giving up one's body, mind, and speech to the Lord, totally surrendering to Krishna in those six ways which I mentioned a few moments ago. And in doing that, he pleases the Lord. If the devotee serves the Lord and gives pleasure to Krishna without desiring anything in return, this is what Krishna drinks up. He sops it up. He laps it up. He loves pure love. That's his feast. You can cook something very tasty, but if your love is not in the food, if it's not offered with the proper spirit and attitude, then why should Krishna care for it? He's not hungering. He's not hankering for pleasure in food. He's hankering for the love that you put into the food. And that's what nourishes him. And when he tastes it, his pleasure is exuded into the food. And when we eat it, if we are Krishna conscious enough, we taste not only the flavor of the food, but Krishna's very pleasure that he received when he ate the food, went back into the food, and even made it more tasty, more enjoyable. So that's why we call it Krishna's prasadam, because Krishna gave his all to the food substance, and it becomes Krishnaized. And when we eat it, we also become more Krishnaized. So I see that I had a story I wanted to tell, but it's getting a little late. And I'm sure all of you want to get to your service on time. And I have a habit of going way over time. But today, although it's 8:15, I will allow at this point some time for questions, but before you do, thank you very much for your attention, for listening. All glories to Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Hare Krishna. Are there any questions or comments that any of us would like to make that I could either clarify or maybe you'd like to contribute something that I forgot to say to give this a more balanced picture? Yes, Prabhuji. Thank you. Hare Krishna. Where do you get the microphone? Yeah. And talk good and loud, because I'm a little hard of hearing.
Hari Bol.
Yeah.
When we see people on the street, we should offer them respects in our minds. Like if we just meet a karmi, we should offer them respects in our minds?
Yes. What the verse is saying is exactly what you just said. There are two levels, and they have to work simultaneously. The one level is that Krishna is in that soul. Now, if you love Krishna and you know that Krishna is in that particular that body, right next to the soul of that person or the soul, then you know that that person is carrying the Supreme Lord. On the other hand, what is coming out of that person may be anything but the Supreme Lord. He may be speaking all kinds of trash and rubbish and nonsense. But if we simply judge him on the basis of what's coming out of him, and we just say, this person is hopeless, he's ridiculous, he's a fool, he's a rascal, he's a nonsense, you miss the whole point, though. He's everything that you just concluded, but the Lord is still within him. And because that person is manifesting complete ignorance, that's why he's speaking and acting and thinking the way he is. But if the Lord chooses to give his grace to that particular individual, his ignorance can begin like a clouds. They begin to lift, the fog, it lifts, and then you begin to see the clear sun. So it's our business when we are dealing with fools and rascals and idiots and nonsenses. On the one hand, hear them out patiently. Don't be ready to punch them in the face immediately. They may be better fighters than you. And that will not be a pretty picture, especially if you like your teeth. So, that's one thing, is that we have to, on the one hand, realize that they're simply manifesting their ignorance. On the other hand, we have to know that Krishna is within that person. And we should silently, quietly pray that that person becomes enlightened. And if you see the opportunity to somehow lead the conversation around to something that he might like, and you can inject Krishna into that conversation, you have saved him from possibly birth, death, and rebirth. You need to know how to lead him or her into that better thing, the thing he doesn't want to know about or hear about or care about. So, but you will not do that if you just think of him as a rascal, a fool, an idiot. That's all. You'll just say what you have to and walk away. So Lord Rishabhdev is saying, keep the Lord in your own heart. Be aware of him. Always remember Krishna. Never forget Krishna. See him in everyone. And then you will bring out the best in everyone as well as yourself. And Krishna will be pleased. Is that clear?
Yes,
thank you. Thank you. Hare Krishna. Yes, Prabhuji.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Bol.
There is two words in Sanskrit. One is samdarshi, another one is samvarthi. So you can see everybody with equal eyes, but you cannot behave equally with everybody. There is a problem. Suppose we see dog on the street, we cannot start embrace. Though of course now people are embracing dogs, but we cannot embrace dog or even the dog eater, because suppose you are a brahmana. And you have to go to the deity worship.
And you have to what?
You have to go for the deity worship.
Yes.
So, in pursuance of some darshi that you have everybody in your eyes, that everybody is equal, you cannot touch him. There should be maintenance of practical applicability.
Absolutely.
That where it is needed, where it is not needed.
Yeah.
So what Rishabhdev is trying to say through this instruction for us is that we... Of course, we behave in a way that everywhere there is a Paramatma, but knowing its usage. That's why Prabhupada stresses on the principles of utility. Whatever is a good and according to the time, place and circumstances, we should deal in such a vision. Like you suggested about the rascals and people. Sometimes we are being criticized by ISKCON. We just start shooting. Just say everybody, you are rascal, you are nonsense, we are devotee, we are this, we are that. It is not so. Maybe there are many people on the street, they are better off, they are well situated in Krishna consciousness, in their own behavior and in their own way, rather than we perceiving ourselves, you know, because we put tilak, we go to Mangal Arati and we are devotee. So, of course, through this message we must understand that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's instructions, the Trinadapi Sunishena, we are like a star on the street, and everybody is greater than us. If we can see through that vision, then our eyes will be equipoised with equality. Because we cannot behave with equality like that unless we make some discrimination.
Yeah, one should chant the holy name of the Lord in a humble state of mind, thinking oneself lower than the straw in the street. One should be more tolerant than a tree, devoid of all sense of false prestige, and should be ready to offer all respect. So that is the mood. That is the. If one has that mood, then he's not going to try to step on somebody. He's not going to kick somebody. He will be in a humble state of mind and be able to deal with every situation, because the Lord will be guiding his speech. He'll be guiding his understanding. He'll be guiding his intelligence. And he will say what is proper and what is useful, at least the best that is possible within a given situation. Anything else? Yes, Mataji. Somebody have the mic, please pass it to her. Or was handed to her.
I've often thought when we look at envy, you know.
You have to talk a little louder for me.
I've often thought when we look at envy, why would we have that? Because if somebody had a talent, that comes from God. And so it said that the antidote to envy is joy. What they have is something beautiful. So we should be happy that they have that.
Right.
Because that's a gift of God. And so also then I also look at what Srila Prabhupada says when we see this in the greater sense of everything. If God God is in everything, not everything is in God. But that when we are with the Sadhu Sangha, then we are to see this. These are our friends. You are my friends. This is what I am to embrace and be enthusiastic with. And those who are not, we are to ask for the Krishna's mercy, for them a great, great deal of Krishna's mercy. And then for those who are inimical, then we are to, with lovingly, but we are to neglect them. Because that, then we don't interact and cause more karma. So that has really made a great clarification for me when I read that.
Thank you very much, Hare Krishna. I think that does it. We've gone out of time. Thank you very much. If any of you still have questions, please feel free to come up to the lecterns, and I'll be happy to try my best to answer. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki.